John Harvey Kellogg, the 10th of 16 children, was born February 26, 1852, to John Preston Kellogg, a transplanted New Englander, and his second wife, Anne. The Kelloggs were abolitionists who operated a station on the Underground Railroad in Tyrone, Michigan. In the spring of 1852, the family was introduced to the Seventh-day Sabbath by a young neighbor, M.E. Cornell, who one day stopped by while John Preston Kellogg was raking hay.
Mr. Kellogg, may I talk to you for a minute?
Sure thing, Cornell. Climb over the fence and speak your piece.
Nice field of clover you have over here.
Yeah. It was Mrs. Kellogg's idea. It not only makes good hay, it improves the soil. So, what's on your mind this morning?
I wanted to tell you about some meetings Angie and I just attended in Jackson. A fellow named Joseph Bates is lecturing there on the Advent.
A Millerite, is he?
Well, yes, but more than that. He teaches the biblical doctrine of a heavenly sanctuary, and he says Saturday's the Sabbath.
Saturday?
Look in your Bible, Mr. Kellogg. You'll find Elder Bates is correct. Look especially at the fourth commandment.
Well, I guess I can do that much. Look here, Anne. Young Cornell was right. Strange that I never took note of it before. The Sabbath really is Saturday.
Let me see. Well, it does seem so, doesn't it? But we're so used to going to church on Sunday, I just don't know.
You know, I haven't been completely satisfied with my religious experience for years. I'm going to study this question thoroughly.
Later that summer, the family attended another series of lectures by Elder Bates in Jackson. John Preston Kellogg, his wife Anne, and the two grown sons, Merritt and Smith, embraced the truths presented. In 1856, the family moved to Battle Creek. John Harvey was small for his age and sickly. He wasn't sure what he wanted to do in life, but an early experience when he and some other boys peeked through the window while a friend underwent surgery on the kitchen table made him certain of what he did not want to be.
Wow! Look at all the candles and all the oil lamps they've got burning. It's as bright as the sun in there.
And he's laid out so still. He looks dead, doesn't he, Johnny? I think he is dead.
He's not dead. They made him breathe that new gas ether, and it put him to sleep. I know that much.
I wonder why the doctor wears that old blood-stained apron. Why doesn't he get a clean one? Ooh, he's starting to cut him with a knife. Ooh, look at the blood spurt.
Ugh.
Ah, I didn't know Eddie had that much blood in him. Did you, Johnny? Johnny, where are you? Where'd he go?
Reading again, Johnny. You're giving yourself a good education. What do you think you'd like to be when you grow up?
Anything except a doctor.
At the age of 11, John Harvey Kellogg began working a regular 10-hour shift at the broom factory his father had opened in Battle Creek. And at age 12, he went to work at the review office. Although he received very little formal education, he taught school for one winter when he was 16. He had to quit, though, because of lung trouble. Over the next few years, he completed his high school studies. During these years, John worked when he was well enough. He often served as a secretary for some of the denominational leaders. For months at a time, the teenager lived in the White home, helping Elder James White with writing and editorial work. Impressed by Ellen White's health message, he became a vegetarian. By 1872, when John was 20, Elder and Mrs. White had come to think of him almost as another son.
You know, John, Sister White has been shown that you're to fill a definite place in God's service.
Me? What? Did she say what I'm supposed to do, Elder White?
No. I guess God will show you your role when the time comes.
The thought is humbling. I must prepare myself so I can answer God's call when it comes. It's probably teaching. I'll take the teacher's training course.
Fine. You can go to Ypsilanti in the spring, to the Michigan State Normal School. If you think you'll be well enough.
Oh, yes, I'm sure I'll be fine. It's just one term, and then I can come home again for the summer.
It's wonderful to have you here for supper, Merritt, to help us celebrate John's homecoming from college.
It's good to be here, Mother.
John, have another helping. You need to make up for all the meals you lost at college.
Now, Mother, I did not starve. I planned carefully. And for an average of 6 cents a day, I ate an adequate diet of vegetables, nuts, fruits, and graham bread.
That's fine, dear. Now eat your potatoes.
Yes, Mother.
We were pleased at the report you sent us, son. Especially when you passed the examination in methods of teaching algebra without even taking the class.
It sounds as though your teaching experience helped you.
Oh, yes, and that book I read by Margaret Fuller helped too. I was surprised at how much I remembered after several years. And I'll always be grateful to Professor Bell for teaching me grammar so thoroughly. It certainly helped me in my English classes.
Well, little brother, you may make something of yourself yet.
Thanks, Merritt. I don't think I'll ever do as much as you. Starting the work in California, then coming back here to help run the Health Reform Institute. But I intend to do my best as a teacher. I can't wait to get back to college this fall.
John's stay in Ypsilanti that autumn, however, was unexpectedly brief.
I was interested in what our professor said about Friedrich Froebel's methods of learning. Had you heard of them before, John?
Yes. Froebel believes young children should have light and air in the classroom and should have time to play instead of sitting cramped at desks for long hours every day. That's why he calls his school a kindergarten, a children's garden.
But can it really work? It seems so frivolous.
Well, I tried his methods on my younger brothers and sisters a few summers ago. I was amazed at how much they learned.
Oh, here's a letter on the desk for you, John.
Oh, I didn't expect one this soon. What? I'm called home for a family council. What could it be about?
I've been asked to meet with your family today, John. And Merritt thinks he needs more medical training than the 6-month course he took at Dr. Trawl's Hygiotherapeutic College 5 years ago. He plans to repeat the course so he can be more useful at the Health Reform Institute. My boys, Willie and Edson, are going, too. And so is Jenny Tremblay.
I see, Elder White, but I don't understand what that has to do with me.
I want you to come to New Jersey and take the course with me, John. I believe you have just the qualities needed in a health reform doctor.
A doctor?
Yes.
Never, Merritt. The last thing on earth I want to be is a doctor. I won't go.
Well, I'm glad there's no tobacco smoke in this car. Everybody comfortable? Jeannie?
Fine.
Willie?
Mm-hmm.
Edson?
Yeah.
Here, John, I'll move over and give you more room. It's a long ride to New Jersey.
John Harvey Kellogg still did not intend to become a doctor. He expected to use his training only for teaching health education. The course at Dr. Trawl's must have aroused the young man's interest in medicine, however, because he was agreeable to Elder James White's next suggestion in 1873 when John was 21.
The climate of medicine is changing, John. If you're going to gain a hearing for our health reform principles, we must have physicians with a sound knowledge of anatomy, physiology, and chemistry.
I agree, sir.
That's why I want you to go to the University of Michigan Medical School in Ann Arbor this fall. The school has been in operation for 25 years now, and the faculty is excellent. You'll get a good training there. What do you say?
I'll go.
James White aided John's education with a loan of $1,000. John attended one term at the University of Michigan, then transferred to the Bellevue Hospital Medical School in New York City, where he could acquire clinical experience. Here, John Harvey Kellogg began a 40-year friendship with Stephen Smith, the doctor who introduced Joseph Lister's methods of antiseptic surgery at the hospital. It was here also, while living on a small budget, with limited cooking facilities, that John first had a revolutionary idea.
Come in. Oh, hello, Peter.
Hello, John. Ready for our class with Dr. Janeway and Dr. Flint? Dr. Janeway said he had some interesting cases for us to diagnose today.
I wouldn't miss their class for the world. Only 6 best students are allowed in. And it's the only place we can get experience with the special examining equipment they have.
Yes, it's worth the $500 they're charging. Mmm, something smells good in here, like baked potato.
Well, I baked one in the fireplace from my lunch.
Have you given up your experiment with that graham cracker and apple diet?
No, I can't afford any other diet. But I do eat a little oatmeal and baked potato now and then.
Mm-hmm.
Cooking is very inconvenient, though, especially when I'm in a hurry to get to my classes. It ought to be possible for folks to buy pre-cooked cereal in grocery stores, all ready to eat.
You have wild ideas, John Kellogg.
In 1874, John Kellogg became editor of the Health Reformer, which he renamed Good Health. He remained editor for the rest of his life. After graduating from medical school in 1875, he became a professor at Battle Creek Adventist College and a trustee for the Seventh-day Adventist Educational Society. He also joined the medical staff of the Health Institute and served as secretary of the board. In July of 1876, Elder James White called on the busy young man.
John, the board has asked me again to offer you the directorship of the Health Institute. We're all sorry that you turned down the offer we made last year.
I believe I made the right decision, Elder White. Sister White confirmed that when she told me it wasn't the right time for me to take charge.
That was last year. How about now?
I'm no more ready now than before. I'm only 24, and so short the staff think of me as a mere boy. Besides, I want to continue with my research and writing.
The Institute's rapidly going downhill. We need you to reorganize it, to bring discipline and order to the enterprise.
I would want complete control. A free hand to restructure the Institute on a rational and scientific basis.
You'll have it.
Well, all right. For 1 year only. Then we'll see.
John's 1 year at the sanitarium would become 67. He practiced what today we call preventive medicine. Nearly 100 years before the U.S. Air Force developed aerobics, John Harvey Kellogg prescribed such exercise for his patients, emphasizing walking, cycling, and swimming.